This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
6 a.m., 14th of March, 2019. I'm Kusu Chuang, joined by Sharit Abdullah and Rin Mark, or Lin Mark, pretending to be the best Japanese person without wanting to generalize too much. How are you guys?
Good, thank you, Chuang. Not too bad. How about yourself?
Like this. Comme si, comme ça, as the French would say.
Okay, yeah. Likewise.
French? Okay, remember last week we talked about that French street that was the subject of Instagram?
It would be nice to see you guys French it up, huh?
I would put my French teacher to shame, so let's not.
On this day in 2013, President Xi Jinping was named President of the Republic of China. I know that because I did some searching on the internet. My digits did the walking. Because otherwise, March 14, nothing very much happens on this day. Nothing
famous,
right?
How long ago was that again?
2013.
2013,
Xi Jinping became...
It's been 6 years,
yeah.
I honestly feel like it's much longer than that.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. A lot of things have happened.
A lot of things have happened. On this day in 1590, the Battle of Ivory happened. Not that anybody cares. On this day in 1794, Eli Whitney patented the cotton gin machine, revolutionizing the cotton industry. Not that anybody cares. In the US. And Hugo de Vries rediscovered Mendel's law of genetics in 1900. Again, nobody really cares about that either.
But tell us the next one. That one is fun.
The dollar went on the gold standard in 1900 after Congress passed the currency. And then the currency act. Then I think in 1974, President Nixon took it off the gold standard, right? Oh. Then after that, the dollar just went downhill after that.
There you go.
So what's on the docket today, guys? Come on, spill the beans.
SBM, that's SBM. Out today. There's a lot of nervous parents. And
the results are out today.
Yes, that's
jang, jang, jang.
So, I mean, there's a lot of nervous parents and most importantly, a lot of nervous kids.
The
right?
Kids
I still remember.
You still remember?
I still remember how nervous I was.
What did you do, Sharit Abdullah, on the day SBM results were coming out? What did you do in the morning?
Oh, that morning?
Other than crap your pants.
I've got a lot of people spitting in my car.
Why?
Like all my juniors spit on my car.
Why?
God knows. They must have hated me or something.
Is this some kind of tradition?
I think it's just that whole relationship, junior and senior thing in a boarding school. Like when you come back, it's like,
RFC,
right.
Boarding school
RFC,
kids.
That's right.
Yes.
What did that come about and what that has anything to do with RMC? But anyway, let's prep ourselves with SBM, you know, mental, SBM. You know, get people to feel a bit more comfortable about when the result comes out.
Lidmark?
So the other discussion we have on the agenda today is about this social media challenge. So when we hear about social media challenges, you know, you think about dumping ice water over your head or jumping out of a moving car.
Stupid ice bucket challenge.
Yeah, so it was for a good cause. But anyway, so there's this new challenge called the trash tag challenge. And basically, it encourages people to clean up their public parks and spaces.
Great. And I talk about couples in business. Great, laddie. Sharit Abdullah is awake at 6:05 in the morning. All that and more after this. So stay on the airwaves, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was James Bay with a Passenger. Great track. And I'm Chuang, joined by Sharit Abdullah and Lin Mark. We've got this interesting little story from the Financial Times about why and whether couples and, well, husbands and wives specifically can and should do business together. Now, obviously, this is a story and I guess a thesis which will divide couples right down the middle, because obviously there's a lot of benefits from doing such a thing. Obviously, time spent together, the trust effect, you know, working in concert with each other. But then also the fact that if you do that kind of thing together, you have no separation from your business and personal lives. Mm. I'm actually of the opinion, and I'm old-fashioned that way, that you're in a relationship and you're husband and wife. And that's it. That's your personal life. And your business life is your business life. And you should have that divide because it's healthier from a work-life balance perspective. Sharit Abdullah, starting with you. What do you think? Oui. Well, you're French already, are you?
No. I think oui. More W-E-Y rather than W-I-I-I.
Oh, Malaysian lah.
Yeah, Malaysian lah. So anyway, in this article, it says that 43% of the couples in the UK, they are family business run, and 53%. So about just more than half of them are run by couples, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big number. I mean, about half of them, so that makes it about 20% of them. You know, I I don't know whether or not I can do this. I mean, even at home, I mean, we can't even get a simple agreement, like what's for dinner, what more for, you know, for things like finances and stuff, in a commercial sense, right? So, it's an interesting idea because, look, I mean, I've been told that there's five things in life that you have to deal with, and at one time you can only deal with three things. So those are friends, family, career, health, and sleep. So you got to pick only three things.
Well, some women might say that that's because men can't multitask, right? I tend to agree with that.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. But anyway, so if you can put, you know, if family is part of your work, then you might have one more slot available. So you could probably spend time with some friends or, you know, more sleep or on health. I don't get to exercise as much as I want.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's a nice idea.
It's a nice idea. Lindmark, what do you think?
I don't think it's really any different from being in a family business. Because when you're working with your sister, your brother, your father, it doesn't seem like it's that much of a stretch to add a spouse into the equation. I do definitely think that you would have to set boundaries, though. Because like you said, it's not you don't want to talk about business for 24 hours of the day. Equally, you don't want your personal life to bleed into business decisions. So it would take a bit of juggling, I imagine. But on the whole, I'm not particularly opposed to this.
I think by sheer necessity, a lot of companies in Asia are family businesses. I think, I mean, the whole string of research houses have done their findings, like from Credit Suisse to Rothschilds, all kinds of like wealth management, UBS, they've done the research. At least 65 to 70% of businesses in Asia are family holding companies, right? And we know this, right? You can see them all around. And family holding companies are typically run by the family, right? So husband and wife, and many examples in Malaysia. Tony and I think Tony Tia of TA Securities and his wife, I can't remember his wife's name, very successful business. Michelle Uy and the husband, Fred, they run 789, sold out, you know, a whole bunch of F&B, very successful. And there's many examples. And I think Asians specifically, we don't think about, oh, husband and wife, you know, we don't think about these things in a theoretical sense. We just do it out of sheer necessity because you have to work with people you trust and you know, and they can get the job done.
Right.
And we're very pragmatic people, Asians, and we just get things done. We're not like the British and the Western side where we trying to philosophize about these kind of things and does it work and, you know, all kinds of things. We just do it because we have to.
Yeah. And I think there's also that part where, you know, with business, there's always that two things. There's what drives you to make a decision. There's the objective side of things, and there's also the emotional side of things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting to have someone who is on board with you, next to you, who understands you emotionally, right? What drives you to make a certain decision? Because I think the people that you work with most of the time, they disregard the emotional side. They expect you to make decision based on objective base. But you cannot deny your emotional sense, right? So having someone to sort of keep check and sort of recognizing, highlighting that, hey, look, you're being quite emotional in this, and, you know, that's one perk, perhaps.
I think this entire discussion also, it doesn't maybe take into account like marriages that are undertaken almost like a business transaction. So, like, you know, you marry someone because they can bring this to the table for
and
your business.
That's a hallmark. That's a hallmark of Asian power couples, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with ultra wealthy families. And I know this because I watched Crazy Rich Asians, and which is more true in real life than you think. In terms of analogies, right? Mm-hmm. But obviously, we've got to stop now, but I'm going to send a message to the world at large about what you think. Should you do business with your other half? Tell us at WhatsApp and 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. 6:17 in the morning, that was Our Deal by Best Coast, an atmospheric millennial track made for the best of listening pleasure. I'm Chuang, joined by Sharitz Abdullah and Lynn Mark. Why are you guys smiling? You didn't like that song? It's good, nice and atmospheric, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of just makes you all dreamy and thinky, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like the next story. kind of like the next story. Did you guys do the ice bucket challenge? Did you? No? Yes? No?
No, I didn't understand what it was all about. I mean, I know what it was all about, but I just couldn't make myself do it. Didn't see how it was going to make it.
Didn't see how it was going to advance your life any further, right?
Or others as well.
Or others as well.
Yeah. I had friends and relatives who did the ice bucket challenge, but I just couldn't be bothered.
Well, the first thing is too cold. Secondly,
I think it would be refreshing in our environment.
I remember bathing in the ice water
It's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, it was quite nice.
Especially this kind of weather,
this
kind of
weather in Malaysia.
39 right. degrees in the shade, mate. Do you know what I mean? It's pretty
British
hot.
Oh, you British person, you.
Yeah, sometimes, sometimes. So now there's a new thing trending on social media. It's called the Trash Tag Challenge. If there's anybody willing to take up the challenge of cleaning up after them.
Yeah.
And this is, well, this can only be a good thing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, you should look at the video in this article. I mean, it shows some of the places around the world where it's like completely trashed and, you know, and there's a before and after photo. And it's refreshing. And I think in KL, I think we could use a little bit of that, a bit of loving in our environment, you know, our surroundings.
Don't even go around the world. I mean, okay, Kuantan, for example, Trating Beach is disgusting. Batu Fringi, I mean, could be a lot worse, could be a lot better. Dumpat, when I went for the International Kite Challenge 2 years ago, it was terrible. There was diapers and Coke bottles everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Malaysians, typically, we are very, very unenvironmentally conscious. And you know what? I recall the story, and I was back in Kuantan. This is like maybe 25 years ago, right? I went there with a mate of mine. We sat down on Trating Beach, and I saw this young blonde kid, right? He's no more than 5 or 6 years old, and his Alsatian pet, right? Both of them, they were walking along the beach in Trating, picking up rubbish, right? And then soon after that, their parents came along, a blonde couple. They're kind of no more than in their late 20s. They had been living in Kuantan, picking up trash for the previous 2 months. And I asked them, what are you doing here? They've just been cleaning up the beaches. And this is in 1998, 1999. And I was completely gobsmacked, right? Because they've come all the way from Sweden. They spent 2 months of their lives cleaning up after us. And where were the Malaysians? Mm. Doing the rubbish. Responsible for the rubbish. Right?
Oh, that's sad.
That's sad.
Yeah,
but this is. But I mean,
speaking about Kelantan, right? I mean, I'm a Kelantanese as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I come from there. That was one of the beef that I have with where we come from. I mean, development aside,
civic consciousness, right? Essentially,
yeah. I mean, I've been to other kampungs as well. For an example, in the southern side, Malacca, Negeri Sembilan, they've got a completely different landscape. They love their gardens. They clean it up really well, and they take pride in it. On the other hand, in Kelantan, there's just something.
Why do you think that is?
I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it's a Malaysian thing. I've seen cars drive by. They just wind the window down, throw their plastic kopi ice out the window, and then they just, as if it's, well, it's not my car, it's not my house anymore. I just chuck it out the window, right? And it happens until today.
It's definitely a lack of civic consciousness, and this is something that they try and teach in schools, right? You have civic
studies.
Yeah, and my instinctive reaction looking at this article in The Guardian talking about the trash tag challenge is that the picture here looks like something straight out of a moral studies textbook.
Yeah.
But we don't actually see that being practiced here. Definitely, definitely not. I'm from KL, and you walk around and the streets are... You know, as a capital city, you think that we have more than enough funds to have cleaners and everything, but we just, it's still dirty.
Look at the toilets. Look at,
let's not even talk about
on the highway,
toilets.
Right? Toll highway. So, any of the rest stops, the toilets. I've seen some garbage dumps cleaner than our toilets.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's why I'm quite for this trash tag challenge, because I feel like social media may have a sort of a peer pressure effect, and that will have a better influence on young people than our moral studies. Because, moral studies, the things you learn in school, typically they're not seen as very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But social media is. So the same people who did the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, maybe you'll see them going and picking up trash in the park.
Yeah, in school, my kids, they see moral studies as a guaranteed A. And I tell them, right? It is, right? It's guaranteed A, right? And I said, look, do you put these principles into practice? Because if you don't, then there's no point getting an A in this subject, right?
Yeah.
But with social media, that's a good thing for young people. And I think young people are responding to the challenge. And it's happening, right? The only problem is the older folk who are not on social media, who are not buying into these trends. And they need to be addressed.
Right. I mean, parents right now, I mean, at least... Immediately when I saw this, I'll take advantage of it. I mean, it's an opportunity to spend time with your kids and teach them something new. I mean, there was that picture that was circulating around the Japanese rugby players that came down that went...
Yeah, right. MCKK, and they left their hotels in a better condition.
Yeah, that's that. But they were also picking up cigarette butts from the school. And so it's a cultural thing. So if there's an opportunity for you to shift that culture to reconstruct your culture, I'd say take it.
It embarrasses us when foreigners come here and clean up after us.
Yeah. So moving along, just something, an opportunity arises, pop culture, like cleaning up, I say take it.
Yeah, I'm going to crowdsource some ideas. I'm going to ask the world at large. How do we get our people to become more civic conscious, right? Suggestions, please. Tweet us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was a terrific track by Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders, Kid. I'm Chuang, joined by Sharit Abdullah and Lin Mark, and we are today, right now, as we speak, talking about exams, and it is today SPM Results Day. And which makes us all think back to those days, those halcyon days when our own results came out and it was a nerve-wracking affair, nail-biting, really.
Absolutely terrifying.
Lin Mark, recall those days. What was it like? And how did you deal with it?
I don't think I slept.
You didn't sleep the night before?
I didn't sleep, no. So, because I studied very hard for the SPM, and then I was like, okay, once the results come out, it's really you can't do anything about it. So you just have to wait, and I hate suspense.
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't a pleasant
same for
feeling
you,
as well.
Huh?
Yeah, the night before and the day after.
But SPM was, there was less at stake with SPM than it was for STPM, right?
Yeah.
Because SPM, you did it, and it was a benchmark of you, how good or how not good you were. But then you had Form 6 to go to, and then Form 6, and within 2 years, you had another set of exams. But STPM really guided your entrance to the university and the course you wanted to do, right?
Yeah. Mm.
So there was less at stake for SPM, but more for bragging rights. Tell me if I'm, because it's the same for me, yeah, O-levels, right?
But that statement, I mean, how good you are.
Or how not good you are,
yeah,
right?
So I think that's what parents are, you know, that's where I think parents should sort of start questioning that, whether or not SPM is an indicator, whether or not your child
is an academic
person, or they're bound for something else, for example.
Also,
you know,
different children learn differently, right? So some people will do better with exams and some people will do better with a longer time to prepare. Because exams, you're basically walking in there and you're regurgitating all the things you've memorized. You know, there's not necessarily a lot of defense or understanding involved.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole exam, the whole school edifice is a century-old structure, and it hasn't changed for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And there's been numerous TED Talks on this issue about the revamp and the transformation of education, and we're still finding a way around the issue, right? Because there is no one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter approach to children's abilities. Some people are sporting, some are musically inclined, some people are vocationally inclined, some people just do well in exams, but then in real life they sometimes stutter and fall.
Book smarts versus street smarts.
And there's a place for everyone in that sense, you know. In the economy, you know, you don't just focus about who's going to be an accountant, doctor, engineer and so forth, but there's also musician, dancers as well.
That's right.
And everybody needs to, you know, just sort of find their element, you know, with regards to this. And I think this is when our school, you know, at the moment the school design, school system doesn't really celebrate this diversity of uniqueness, you know, that fundamental.
If anything, it penalizes our diversity.
In some ways. So I think, hopefully, you know, after the result that comes out today, it's not taken that it's an ultimate
test?
Yeah,
barometer?
Test or barometer for your children, rather that it's just an indication.
It's not a barometer. It is far from the ultimate barometer.
It's just an information to tell you that, hey, look, you know, we need to review as in who my kid is, you know, what he's good at.
I will say, though, that just going back to an earlier point that you made, that SPM is not necessarily as important as STPM. So I got into university on the back of my SPM results because I went straight into a foundation and then a degree.
Okay.
So it can definitely be the thing that channels you into your path to the future. It can be very scary. Yeah.
And the fact that we're so vigorously discussing this and emotionally invested as well, our education minister has been in the press for oftentimes the wrong statements and the wrong remarks and focusing on very, very specific issues which actually he needn't have spoken about, right? What we're looking towards YB Masdi is really high-level policy decisions and direction in terms of our futures, which are our children. And until now, I don't think we have gotten that kind of policy direction yet.
Yeah, so I think there has been some work done. I don't know, I can't spill out the details entirely, but there's been talk about going to Finland and trying to study their, you know, their education system and so forth.
And even by itself, I don't think the Finnish model is going to be working for the Asian-Malaysian model.
But again, so this is when I think we can't really haste things with regards to education system. I guess what you're trying to say is that we need to hear from the education Education Minister that, you know, that they're working on something really solid, a plan that is really solid. And I think that's where it's important. I think they need some time to really come up with it. You don't want to be flip-flopping. I mean, that's what's been happening for the past 30 years.
Yeah, actually, I met an old friend yesterday at a conference, and he's actually part of the Muslim Professionals Forum. A gentleman named Uzaidi, right? A friend of mine from way back when. He's actually part of the advisory committee working in the background to revitalize the whole education system. And I'm quite sure that something interesting will come out of it, hopefully, right? When we've got another 4+ years in terms of where the new government is. Some feedback has just come in, and we've been deluged by feedback, as always. Intan Sabrina Mohammed saying that SPM was the most traumatic exam in her entire life. We should do without it, and I agree with you, Intan. Continuous assessment from year one to form five a child's life should not be determined by just one final exam. Very good point.
I completely agree, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean... It can get a lot of people depressed in some ways.
No, this is serious.
Right. I mean, a few years ago, I mean, there were cases of suicide.
That's
and so
right.
forth. People can take That's this right. really wrongly, and they take a lot of pressure, you know, from this result. So, parents, you just take it easy out there, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess the question to our listeners is really, how important is the SPM, and in what way, shape, and form? And I think this is a big question, right? But can the education system be restructured? Tell us what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Thrills with Big Sir. This is BFM, and I'm Chuang, and I'm joined by Sharitz and Lynn. And very much in the same vein that we're talking about education, this whole issue of college admissions is a huge scam that's just broken out in America. Now, this guy, William Singer, at the very epicenter of the scam, he was taking bribes from parents, taking as much as $75,000 per child to get their kids into the best universities. And the way he would do it is he would get other people to sit exams on the kids' behalf. He would be bribing sports coaches to get their kids on an athletic scholarship into the university of choice. And all kinds of ways, basically, to get wealthy parents and their children into elite schools across America. And this is something which is just broken out across the country over there. It made me think about how important parents have, and in terms of prioritizing the best schools for their children. And I don't know whether this happens in Malaysia, but I know for a fact back then in those days, the CLP exam, top man in charge, he was actually doing the same thing, taking bribes to get kids passed for the bar exams. And, you know, the CLP is the same thing. It's just the Malaysian equivalent of the bar. Prevalent corruption at the highest levels.
I definitely think I would not be surprised at all, because at its most basic, money talks, right? And the culture of pulling strings for your kids is still very prominent here in Malaysia.
Yeah, even after graduation and to get
exactly,
the best
to get
jobs.
A job, to get an internship. It's entirely well-meaning, but I feel that ultimately it does a disservice to your kids, because these kids are not getting in on their own merit. So there's no guarantee then that they will be able to stand up to all the expectations that will be placed on them.
The chickens will come home to roost.
Exactly.
Yeah, and there's also that case. I don't know if you have ever come across where, you know, there are parents out there who would go the extra mile donating a lot of money to schools.
A new chemistry lab,
just to sort of, you know, safeguard their children, for example. I've come across where there are troublesome students, and, you know, their parents are the ones that sort of keep them, are the ones that would allow them to remain in school. I mean, in a way of donation form, using, again, like you said, Lynn, the form of money, really.
The big injustice here is the spots that would otherwise have gone to more deserving students from less privileged backgrounds. And that's the big injustice here. And I mean, big business and the corporate world is littered with examples of people who don't really deserve to be in their positions, but who are there because of the connections and the people daddy know, or the kind of like money in the largesse that's been spread around because to get them into that place. And they get found out eventually. They start to go into business and to become their own entrepreneurs. And the big, bad, hungry world of business, you will get found out pretty soon.
Yeah, and we came across that incident quite recently as well, with some MPs and some ministers with questionable sort of
in Malaysia?
education certificates. just quite recently. I mean, some of them who take their
courses
online.
They got found out.
And, you know, and this is thing. I mean, some of them, the problem is that some of them would actually use this as a sort of status symbol or in some ways to leave, you know, not, but, you know, as a...
To get a shortcut, like, some kind of like, easy ingress, right? And remember back in those days, Lee Ka-shing's son, Richard Lee, he faked his Stanford degree. And this is when he's trying to raise funds for PCCW back in those days, right? Even the most august of families are guilty of those things. What do you think? You know, if your child was not up to scratch, would you put a bit of coin in the other guy's hand, into the admissions man's hand, to get your child
It's hard
university?
For me to really put myself in that shoe.
Because it's one thing to talk about it in the theory. It's quite another if it's your kid involved.
And I just don't have the amount of moolah for me to be able to do that in the first place. But if I do...
If you did, would I?
Right? Yeah. Oof, that is a tough question.
And I mean, all of us have kids.
But look, at the end of the day, some of this family...
No, we don't.
Some of this, to retain family business, they have their own way to sort of maintain that reputation. And
Right.
I mean, if it's a family business, it doesn't affect you, does it? I mean, does it? I mean, would you feel like you've been, there's any form of injustice in such a way?
Just imagine that movie, Crazy Rich Asians, right? If you're coming from a multi-billion dollar property conglomerate, right, and your kid doesn't make it to Yale, for example, and he goes to University of Pirit Bunta, right? Never let it be said, hot heresy. But you will never let that happen. You'll ensure they go to Yale or Cambridge.
But then do you ask your kids? So, because this is the other thing that I kind of wonder looking at this article, right? Did they ask their children what the kids thought of it? Or did they just proceed on the assumption?
They would just have acted unilaterally,
So then, are you really acting in your child's best interest or are you acting in your own best interest? Because these kids, you want to be able to boast that your kid is going to Yale, going to Stanford or going to Harvard. You're basically turning them to trophy children rather than actual kids.
That's the preservation of face that the Asians love to do. But in America, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah. Mm. You remember but let's not just focus on parents. There are some students who abuse their, you know, for example, the money that they get from their parents as well. I've seen in movies where they start paying whatever allowances that they get, they pay other people to take on their tests for them.
Yeah, do the homework for them, right?
So there's that.
But then eventually, when the
don't know if the parents know about this.
Like Warren Buffett once said, if you like to go swimming naked, when the tide goes out, you'll know who's been swimming starkers, right? It's the same thing.
I'm trying to relate that.
Warren Buffett said that, not me. Warren Buffett said that. On that highly erudite note, stay tuned because the 7 o'clock news is coming up after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.